You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
On today's show, the question everybody's asking this week, why is Arkansas playing at Memphis? We've asked. We'll give you the answer. Also, Joe Healy of D1 Baseball will join us to talk about the Razorbacks' fall practice. First, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
If Rip Van Winkle woke up and watched college football this weekend, he would say, why is Arkansas playing at Memphis? You know, SEC teams, they don't go play these type of teams. Well, first off, he wouldn't even know the terms Power Four and Group of Five or Group of Six or any of the stuff that we use. But the point being that if you haven't been paying attention, you would look at this and say, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why is this team going and playing at that team? But if you ask that question, then I think we automatically know you have not been paying attention. This is becoming very popular. A lot of these are what we call two-for-one agreements, which are three-game agreements where a team will play a game two times somewhere and one time at the stadium of the team that usually doesn't get the big team to come play them. So in this case, Arkansas is going to play at Memphis this year. And as part of this three-game contract, they're going to play again in Fayetteville in 2028 and in 2030. And by the way, if you haven't been paying attention, Arkansas has one of these coming up with Tulsa, too, where Tulsa comes to Fayetteville twice, and Arkansas will go over to Tulsa in 2027. It's very common. You're seeing this a lot in college football right now. Just this year alone, last week we saw Oklahoma go to Temple. We saw in week one Mississippi State go to Southern Miss. Last week, we saw SMU, which, yes, if you woke up after a 20-year nap, SMU is a football team again. They went to Missouri State. Arkansas State got Iowa State to come to campus last week. And there's a lot more instances of this. I mean, whether it be Oklahoma State going to TU or OU has gone to TU. We saw last year where Ole Miss went to Tulane. And I looked up some future years, like South Carolina's going to Appalachian State. I think next year, Ole Miss is going to Charlotte next year. They're going to South Alabama in 2029. Oklahoma's going to San Diego State. Missouri's going to like every Group of Five team known to man. They're going to San Diego State twice. They're going to Northern Illinois. They're going to North Texas. They're going to FAU. And North Texas, by the way, I didn't look up everybody. These are just some of the teams I looked up. North Texas in future years is going to host in Denton, Baylor, Texas Tech, Colorado, and Missouri. Now, at the question as to why this is happening, we asked Hunter Yurecek this at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club a couple of weeks ago, and he said the reason that they do this is to save on a guarantee. They go to Memphis. Memphis doesn't pay Arkansas anything to come there. But then as a return, when Memphis comes to Fayetteville, Arkansas doesn't have to pay them the $1.5 to $2 million guarantee for that first trip. They'll have to pay for the second trip. But when you're a program that is I'm not going to say Arkansas is financially strapped, but relative to some of the other SEC teams, I think they are financially. We heard Hunter say this at the Little Rock Touchdown Club yesterday. They're, you know, they're playing with a bank of about $180 million a year. There are other teams that are playing with over $300 million a year. And so this is a way to be financially responsible and save yourself a couple of million dollars where you can reallocate those funds to something else. And by the way, they're doing this in a year where they're playing in Little Rock and they're losing money by playing in Little Rock. So that's a long-winded way of saying that this is why this is happening.
Yeah, my favorite one was, remember when Missouri played at UMass last year?
Yes.
That one was pretty good. UMass is going back to Columbia this year, I think. That's for their second one. I think they played in Columbia a couple years ago. But that's one of my favorite examples because that was like the number one last year of why is this happening? Mm. Like everybody looking at that and going, why on earth is Mizzou going to like one of the worst programs in college football, like historically and currently?
I think there is value. Even if you're not playing, you know, a Power Four team or, you know, an SEC team, I actually think there is value going on the road. Like, what if Arkansas goes on the road this week and they learn something about themselves? Maybe it's something that we never see on the field. Maybe it's something about the way that they travel. Maybe it's something about the way that they do their pregame routine in the hotel. And that benefits them down the road at Knoxville or at Baton Rouge or at Austin. We may never know the answer, but internally, you never know. I think that the more you travel, the more that it can potentially help your your team down the road whenever you have to travel to other games.
I think so, too. And I do think, you know, you're playing a good group of five team, you know, in Memphis. I think that's something. It's not nothing. It's not the, you know, you definitely have more to lose if you lose it, but you do gain a little bit from winning it. I mean, you're expected to, but at the same time, it's not a total, you know, it's not like, okay, you beat Arkansas State, whoop-de-doo. You know, there's a little bit more to it with Memphis specifically, but it's still not, you know, oh, wow, you beat Memphis? Okay. You know, it kind of walks that line. So I don't really mind this, to be honest with you. I think the number one thing is just that it's Memphis, and Arkansas has been to this stadium so many times. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's particularly exciting from the Arkansas perspective. But I do, I mean, I'm not mad about it. I'm interested in it.
And their stadium is still being renovated. Yes. The initial plan was that the stadium would be complete by the start of this season. I guess they've run into some issues and now maybe it's next year that the stadium is going to be complete. We saw this firsthand last year. It was not the greatest situation at the Liberty Bowl. Be it their press box is basically a bunch of suites that have been repurposed, you know, and then there's a huge gap in the stadium right now where they tore down a significant number of the seats. Used to, you could get 55 to 60,000 people in that stadium, and I think the max capacity right now is about 42.
Yeah, I'll be curious kind of what it looks like from when we were there a few months ago, and crowd-wise, you know, for an actual Memphis game as opposed to a bowl game, what it looks like crowd-wise.
I think Arkansas is going to have a good crowd there.
Yeah, I would expect them
I mean,
to.
You know, for a lot of the reasons that we say or that have been made, points that have been made about Arkansas playing in Little Rock, where this is a way for people who are in the eastern and southern part, the southeastern part of the state, they can go see the Razorbacks play. Well, here's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you live in Forest City, it's quicker to drive to Memphis than it is to drive over to Little Rock. But the point being that the, you know, some of those same benefits that playing at War Memorial offer to people in that part of the state, which is a day trip to the game, not having to pay for a hotel, less gas, whatever, they exist going to Memphis too. And I think that that's been strategic with Arkansas scheduling these games, whether it be at Memphis, where you have a big alumni base in that city, and then obviously that city sits on the border with your state, or Tulsa, where they've got a massive alumni base in Tulsa. I think in both of these games, you may see 50-50 split, if not more red in the stadium than blue.
Yeah, I would certainly expect something like that. I think I'm excited to kind of be there for a Memphis home. You know, of all the times we've been there, it'll be fun to see it actually in the stadium, you know, that or with the team that actually, you know, plays in that stadium all the time. And then basketball, the preseason, the charity exhibition is going to be in Memphis, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of Memphis happening across all sports. So that is, you're right about, I hadn't really thought about it that from that angle where, for all the talk about wanting to get people in other parts of the state a chance to see the Razorbacks play, well, you're getting to do it in football again after the Liberty Bowl, and you're now getting to do it in basketball too. So I do think that's kind of a cool thing that's happening this year.
I'm just a sucker for scheduling like unique games. Yeah. I really am. Like the baseball team going to Arlington every mm-hmm. year. I love that. I think that's really neat. The basketball team, I thought what they did with OU over at the BOK Center was really cool. Or playing in Kansas City last year, or they're going to play in American Airlines Center down in Dallas again this year. I just think those are neat opportunities where it's not the same old, same old.
I'm not a huge neutral site. I guess it's different in other sports, but like football, from a football sense, I'm not a huge like neutral site fan with football specifically, but that's not what we're talking about here with this Memphis game. But I think, and it's a little different with basketball and with baseball as well, especially with how well Arkansas fans travel to those games in Arlington. But I think in general with football, I'm not crazy about like neutral site. I just think with football, when you have so few games, just put them on campus. Like, everybody wants it on campus, put it on campus.
The number of games does make it easier. Yeah. And like with basketball, you know, if you take your team to Newark, like they're going to do this year, you take them to Dallas, there's a pretty nice payday that's associated with that benefits not just basketball, but can you know, potentially benefit the other programs too. And then obviously one of the reasons that Dave Van Horn takes his baseball team down to Arlington every year is because, you know, sometimes on February 14th, love might be in the air, but lots of clouds and snow too. And so it's hard to play baseball here in Fayetteville. So that's why that, you know, they like to go down there because they know that they can get, you know, a closed roof and a 72 degree nice atmosphere to play games. And you know you're going to get games because that time of year, you know, a lot of teams are having to cancel games.
Yeah. And that's really important. That event is run so well. I really like that they schedule in general, you know, pretty regional teams. Like people travel for that. And everybody I've talked to who's gone on that trip for baseball says they have a great time. People do it every year. Like you love it. And you from a media perspective and just from a baseball perspective love it. But a lot of fans really like it too.
I've already booked my hotel.
Nice.
I booked my hotel like a month and a half ago, actually. You kind of get into the, I like this place. We go here. We do this. Yep. And it's a lot of fun. By the way, it's Rhythm and Roar, the Memphis music theme this week in the crowd. I don't know what that means, but I guess it's some sort of celebration of Memphis music.
Cool. Hey, that's a cool thing about Memphis. I like when they kind of embrace stuff like that. I don't know. It seems interesting.
Did you see Hunter Yurecek at the Little Rock Touchdown Club yesterday?
I caught some highlights. I caught some clips, and I caught your story that you put on our website. I caught some highlights.
So without getting into this whole third lane hypothetical thing, I'll let other people talk about that.
See, that's the most interesting thing that happened.
So, I mean, okay, so you have the mic.
Okay.
What's so interesting about it?
The fact that he said the quiet part out loud, you know, like he basically said, like, we could, like, consider cheating, you know, which is kind of crazy to me. But I mean, I understand what he's saying. I understand, you know, and I think there's a lot of people, who would look at Arkansas, you know, Arkansas fans who would look and say, we're not doing everything we can. We know some of these other high-level SEC programs. We know they're kind of looking for that third lane, like he said. We know that they're doing these things to try to get ahead, and we are not, and it's causing us to be behind. And there's people who would rather Arkansas, and cheating might be a strong word. It's kind of more, the way Yurecek described it, if you haven't seen, he gave the example, he was like, you know, in the crowd, raise your hand if, you know, the speed limit's 55 and there's, you know, there's not going to be a cop there to pull you over. Are you going 65? You know? And so it's not cheating. Cheating might be a strong word, but it's kind of bending the rules and doing things that maybe you're not supposed to do, but that nobody's stopping you from doing.
Basically taking advantage of the fact that there is no enforcement really in place
exactly
in college sports right now.
So him saying, you know, we are, you know, we kind of have to look at what that might look like for us if we're going to be competitive, which is really interesting that he would say that out loud on a stage. But I also don't necessarily blame him for thinking that way. It's just fascinating to me that he would put that on Front Street.
I've always thought Yurecek, I'm not going to say he's an open book, but I think that he will tell you what he's thinking. And a lot of times he'll tell you what he's thinking in a realistic view. And
which I think is generally good.
There are people who like that, and there are people who don't like that. There are people who appreciate the honesty and saying, look, this is how it is. Like when he went to Little Rock last year and he said, hey, Ole Miss has 5,000 people that give to its collective. We have 1,000. And if we ever want to get to the point that they're at consistently, we've got to have more people give to the collective like they do. You can agree or disagree on whether or not that would actually have the desired result, but that's what the person who's in charge of the program thinks that it would take to get to that point. Yesterday, he makes the point that Arkansas's got a $181 million annual budget. There are other teams that make over $300 million per year. And he said, I know the focus is on football. He said, but I think we're set up to win a national championship in men's basketball. We know we're set up to win a national championship in baseball, and I think we're set up in several other sports to win a national championship. And then he gets to football, and he says, quote, football, where we are right now, we're not set up to win a national championship. I'll just be brutally honest with that, but I think we're set up really well in the SEC, especially now with the new revenue-sharing model. There are going to be people who take that and say, this is – you got to fire this guy for – saying this. He's going to wreck a potential coaching search in a few months. He's going to do this. He's going to do that.
There's something to that.
I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm not saying it's wrong that people would have that opinion. But this is who he is. He's going to tell you what he thinks, and he's going to give you a very realistic viewpoint of where Arkansas is.
Which, from a media perspective, I actually really appreciate. And I also think, I was talking to somebody on the phone about this morning, about, you know, they were really surprised that he would say it this way, that he would say, we are not set up to compete, basically. And I kind of was like, well, what do you want him to say? Do you want him to pretend that that's not the case? Because we all kind of know that. We can see it. And I think the best way from like a PR perspective to go about it would be to not lie, but to put the emphasis on, and here's everything we're doing to get there, and here's how you can help, and here's what, but rather than just saying we're not, which like, it's not that, it's not as if he is not doing anything. We just talked about some of the scheduling stuff they're doing. You know, we've seen some of the things they're doing to cut costs and then to add revenue. It's not like they're not trying, but I think, you know, from, if you put the PR hat on, you maybe want to kind of emphasize the ways in which you're trying instead of going, yeah, we just can't do it. I also wanted to pull this up. Extra Points newsletter, Matt Brown, who's been on the show before, you forwarded me this, and I had actually already seen it. He put out a spreadsheet of the operating budgets for football for fiscal year 24. And Arkansas is in the top 20. Now, this excludes private schools. You know, there's some schools, the way he does this, that he cannot get the data because you have to be a resident of the state, and he didn't have anybody who could help him get that from inside that state. Or private schools, you're not going to be able to get anything through Freedom of Information Act requests. So this is not necessarily a 100% ironclad top 20, but it does give you, you know, it includes most schools.
Like, it's not going to have Notre Dame.
Right. Arkansas is in the top 20 there at 19 at $57.1 million. Ole Miss is right above them, $57.1 and some more. Also ahead of them, these, I'm just going to list SEC schools. Oklahoma, Auburn, Texas, Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, Texas A&M. Alabama and Texas A&M are the top two that he was able to get. Alabama by a lot.
Like, Alabama's budget is twice what Arkansas's is for football.
And this does not include player payroll. This does not include, like, revenue share figures. This does not include, like, NIL figures. This is, like, you know, this is salaries, other resources like that.
But you pay your recruiting staff, you pay your coaches.
Which Richard Davenport has written a lot about, on, you know, in the last couple months. About
Arkansas's at the bottom.
They're lagging behind in recruiting staff.
Yeah. This is what you pay on travel. I mean, there's all kinds of things that go into it. But again, Arkansas is, what, $57
million?
Alabama's $113.8
million. Yep.
Texas A&M is $90.7 million. So, like, these are the numbers. Ohio State won a national championship last year, $78.5 million. So these are the numbers that Arkansas is fighting against. And, again, going back to the realist versus the dreamer. You know, he had your Frank Broyles here for all those years, who I feel like he was a dreamer. Now, maybe he was a realist behind closed doors, but man, whenever you'd put a microphone in front of him, we're going to build a 100,000 seat stadium, you know?
And I think you kind of need to do that.
You might have to.
I mean, like, I
don't think there's any right or way or wrong way to do this.
Yeah.
But there certainly is a matter of perception out there based on, you know, whatever route you take.
Right. I appreciate honesty. I am glad that he is being honest. I'm surprised he's being honest.
I'm not surprised.
I mean, I guess I'm not surprised because this is what he's done before, right? But I mean, I'm just surprised that, like, any athletic director does that, if that makes sense.
One thing there, with Ole Miss, I would be interested to see what Ole Miss allocates, because you said that their numbers are so close to Arkansas. I would be interested to see what Ole Miss allocates to other sports.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is Ole Miss's basketball allocation versus Arkansas's basketball? What is their baseball allocation versus baseball? You know, think what you want to. Arkansas really likes the fact that they have a successful track and field program. Well, in order to have a successful track and field program, you better be spending with the Oregons and the Texas A&Ms, who also want to have big track and field programs. There are people out there, I've heard from them, who would say, I don't care about these other sports. I just care about football. We ought to put all of our resources into football, and then we'll have trickle-down economics, college football style, where if football is successful, then all of the other sports will be successful, but we don't need to worry about anything else until football gets right.
There is that thought out there.
Yeah,
and I understand where that comes from, and I'm not going to tell those people, you know, you're wrong for thinking that way. I think it just comes down to what you prioritize as a fan. I'm not that way because I really like a lot of these other sports. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to what college sports are.
It would be very tough for me, because I'm like you. It would be tough for me if like my entire satisfaction revolved around, as a sports fan, revolved around 12 days a year, mm-hmm. or 13 with a bowl game, or maybe 15 if you get to the playoff. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, I like the fact that, okay, if football's bad, you can look ahead and, hey, here's a shiny object.
Yeah.
The basketball team is going to be playing Texas Tech in Dallas. Yeah. Or you got a baseball team that is typically pretty good, or those kind of things. I enjoy that.
Yeah.
I'm not belittling anybody who doesn't.
Right.
Enjoy
it's
that,
like, you're not a bad fan if you're not like really pumped to go to every volleyball game. Like, I understand like that's not a thing. Like, I'm not like, I was never going to those when I was growing up a fan. Yeah. But like, you know, but there's people that are interested in it. I do still think those sports have value. I do, you know, I think that's just the really hard part about where college sports is right now. With how you balance kind of the mission and what does the mission become when you now have kind of, when things are more professionalized, but they're more professionalized in some sports, but not all. Mm. It's really hard. And that's kind of the big crossroads that they're at right now is, you know, how do we manage all of these other sports and how much support can we give them and how much do they matter to us? And I think that's something that every school is handling a little bit differently and doesn't really have an answer to right now.
One other thing that he said yesterday that stood out to me, he addressed Sarah Huckabee Sanders wanting Arkansas and Arkansas State to play every year at War Memorial Stadium. He said, quote, "I can tell you that's he can tell you that's what's happening." That being that there's a conversation happening on the Razorback campus. He says the athletics department leadership has met. He said he's met with Charles Robinson, the chancellor. They're involving the board of trustees, the system president, and he said, so we're doing that part on our end. But he said, quote, and this is one of those where you have to read between the lines. He says, my primary role as AD is to make decisions that I believe are in the best interest of our student athletes and our department. I said student athletes. I never want to say that. And our department to be successful in both the short and long term. He said, playing football games at War Memorial is a key piece to the history of being Razorbacks. He says, but I know our state has always wanted what's best for the program. And he says, as we enter a new era of college athletics, playing football games in Little Rock and to continue doing that requires some thoughtful consideration, and that's exactly what we're doing at this point in time. I don't think they're going back. I really don't.
They definitely don't want to.
Unless they're made to.
Yeah.
Like if there's a, you know, the legislative body gets together and says, you know, House Bill, whatever, Arkansas must play Arkansas State, I guess that, you know, that may have to happen. I don't see that happening. But you read between the lines, and it doesn't sound like Arkansas is going back to War Memorial Stadium. I wanted to point this out. Going back to big programs playing on, you know, smaller programs' campuses, the attendance in Jonesboro last week for Iowa State, an undefeated, highly ranked team, they don't get ranked teams coming to Jonesboro very often, and certainly not ranked teams coming from the Big 12. In a stadium that seats almost 31,000, the announced attendance was just over 22,000. I think it was like 22,300 something.
And I'm assuming that they are doing the kind of thing that most schools do where that's tickets sold.
I would think so. I mean, I think everybody right now is announcing their tickets sold because that's the biggest number that you can announce. Yeah. Now, if they sold 30,000 but 22,000, even if that's just people who showed up for this program that's trying to take a step up in class to show up for and now back to the Razorback, because I don't want to spend too much time talking about A-State. Back to the Razorback discussion. If you're A-State and you got the governor going to bat for you saying, well, we need to play in front of more people and playing in Little Rock is going to give us the opportunity to do it. Like, doesn't this kind of wash out that argument? The fact that you've only sold or had 22,000 people to your 31,000 seat stadium?
Yeah. I mean, pretty much. That's pretty crazy, actually. Because you had texted me, I think, or maybe said something on the phone about how it looked really empty. And then to actually go look at the numbers, it's like, yeah, you weren't wrong. And if that was just tickets sold, who knows how many were actually scanned?
I mean, you know, I mean, empty is relative, but.
Right. Yeah.
You would think for a game like that.
Yeah.
That this is your opportunity to kind of show out.
I wonder what their average attendance is. Like, I wonder if that's like,
I'm sure this is a big attendance. Okay. I would think this is a big attendance for them, but still 22,000 people for a game that you know, is literally like a once in a decade type game. Mm-hmm. I think Missouri in 2015 was the last time a big name team went to their stadium.
And then they played well.
Yeah.
Arkansas State played well. They had a good game.
But I don't know. It just felt weird. The week that you go, and maybe people were discouraged by what they saw against Arkansas and thought, hey, I don't want to go there and spend my money to watch this happen on our field. But I don't know. It just felt awfully odd that you're trying to build some momentum to play the big team in the state. Mm-hmm. And you've got a lot of people, prominent people, it feels like, on your side. And then you get a big game on your campus the next week and you fill up about 2/3 of it. Very strange.
Do you remember what time that game was?
Arkansas State and Iowa State? Yeah, it was a daytime game. I can't remember.
I was like, it was probably
I think it was a mid-afternoon game.
It was probably really hot. So I probably would not have wanted to go if I were like an Arkansas State fan. So I don't blame them for that. But
anyway, I just don't feel the momentum for this Arkansas State at War Memorial thing. All right, Christina, appreciate you being here. When we come back, Joe Healy from D1 Baseball will join us to talk about the Razorbacks fall practice. But first, another word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King. We are Soapbox. We are ShopCart. We are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. Joe Healy covers college baseball, the SEC in particular, for D1Baseball.com, and he joins us now. Joe was in Fayetteville last weekend, and he and I watched a practice together. The Razorbacks going through their fall practice right now. Joe, what stood out to you?
The combination of the fact that I came away thinking about how young the team is and also being so bullish on the talent they have there. I think we're just – it's so talented that I'm not saying that the youth is not going to be an issue or be something that crops up. I would not be surprised if it takes the team a little while to get its feet under it, but I have no doubts about its ability to still be a team that makes a deep postseason run. So, you know, usually with the youth, you get, I come away thinking like, oh, if it clicks, that's, you know, but maybe it'll be something. But with this team, I felt so blown away by the quality of the young talent that I came away a lot less worried than I think I normally would be.
I don't think Arkansas is going to be a team that hits the baseball quite like it did last year. And I'm talking about power numbers. I don't see them hitting 127 home runs again. But it does feel, Joe, like they could be a team that could be really stout again on the mound. Gabe Gackle's not pitching this fall. But, you know, what we saw last weekend, whether it be Hunter Dietz had a nice performance, it looks like, you know, if he can stay healthy, he's going to play a big role on this pitching staff. I was even impressed what I saw last week with Steele Eaves. And you just go down the list, there's a lot of pitchers that feel like they could make Arkansas competitive, even if the offense isn't what it was this last year.
I think that's right. I mean, certainly you love the high-end potential of a rotation, let's just say hypothetically, of Gackle and Gibbler and Dietz, right, if it turns out shake out that way. You know, I think you mentioned Steele Eaves. I think he and Cooper Dossett might actually be like the two most important pieces. If you forced me to say, Joe, you know, like if this really goes well for Arkansas on the mound, who are two of the linchpins of that? I'm not saying they'll be the two best guys, but two most important guys might be those two because they're a little more veteran. They've, you know, injuries obviously have been a factor there. And you know, in Eaves' case, not having the experience. But they have both appear to have taken steps forward. And so when you look year after year about the teams in the SEC that go from being an Omaha team to being again in national title contention or being a little bit better the next year, obviously it's hard to be any better than what Arkansas was last year. But if they're going to be one of those teams, like one of the consistent things you see year after year is guys who were role players the previous year or were out with injury the previous year, what have you, that then come back and have clearly gotten better. And so I have to wonder with the summers we saw for those guys, and in Dawson's case, the rehab that he was doing, and since the beginning of the summer, all the positive things Dave Van Horn had to say about his recovery and his rehab, I have to wonder if those two guys actually end up being kind of the important pieces to take the pitching staff from, you know, a lot of star power with maybe some questionable depth to being a team that has both the star power and the depth.
You know, the transfer portal, you never know what you're going to get out of the transfer portal. Sometimes you get a player and you think he's going to be one thing and he doesn't turn into that. I think about Landon Beidelsees last year. I think you guys may have even had him as like the top or number three transfer in the country. And he came here and he had some okay outings, but it wasn't what you thought you might be getting from someone that highly rated. It feels like this year what Arkansas did was they got some pitchers who don't have the name appeal. They got some stuff. And if they can stay in the zone, they could be really good down the line. But where they went and focused a lot of their transfer efforts this year were at the position players. And you're in the weeds on this. Where did you think that this class, from a transfer standpoint, stacks up to other SEC teams?
Yeah, it's top five, top 10 in those types of conversations. And I think there is enough high-end potential here that we could look back on it as maybe the most impactful, because what stands out to me, particularly on the position player side of things for transfers, is that you've got some guys who you look around and say, man, these guys are, the raw talent is incredible, but the numbers just haven't quite been there, or maybe you think there's room to grow. So let's do a couple examples. Mike Anew, very good year at Marshall last year, but he played shortstop. And frankly, he didn't play it very well, like 35 errors last year at shortstop at Marshall. They move him to center field, and by they, I mean over the summer in the Cape, Falmouth, they move him to center field, and it clicks immediately that this is where he should be playing. And now the coaching staff sees him as a plus defender. He's got some pop. He can run the bases. Still maybe some improvements to be made on his field to hit and avoiding strikeouts, but if he's able to do that, we're talking about the guy won MVP of the Cape League for a reason, right? So you got him, and then you have TJ Pompey from Texas Tech, who I talked to some scouts last year that were like, he's the best guy on Texas Tech's roster. Now, he dealt with some injuries last year, so that's not all of saying he had a disappointing year is fair to him. But even the year before, I mean, his numbers were fine, but they weren't necessarily up to the level of what his talent is. So that's just a couple of examples, but those are both guys that have all SEC type tools. Now, can they take those tools and turn it into all SEC production? That remains to be seen. But it's one of the reasons why I'm really high on this transfer class, because you're never going to bat 1,000 in your transfers. But Arkansas has done a really good job of having a very high batting average. And I have a lot of faith that some of those, I don't even want to call them lottery tickets, but some of those like high yield investments they've made in the portal, I think are going to end up being a big deal come the end of the season.
You can always get a feel, I think, how a player is going to play the next season based on how his offseason goes. Vahiva Aloy, he was blowing up on the Cape Cod League last summer. He's the National Player of the Year. This last summer, Ryder Helfrich made the USA Collegiate National Team. Seemed like the coaches liked what he did. And then you're seeing him this fall just hit the cover off the baseball for Arkansas. He had a 3-run home run the day that you were out there. Where do you think he stands in the conversation about the best catchers in the country? Because to me, this looks like the type of offseason that leads into an All-America type season.
Yeah, with the caveat that, you know, I'm not as familiar with some of the other conferences, I have to imagine he's up there with any catcher around the country. And I've talked to enough people about him that I'm pretty confident that with another step forward, he's a first-round pick and maybe a top 15 pick. You know, top 15 picks the first round. That's the type of player we're talking about, because like what catches your attention is the power, right? And we saw it with that home run on Saturday, where it's just like the minute it's off the bat, it's like, well, that's gone. And it's probably 400 and some odd feet to dead center field. And that's probably his biggest tool, but he's also a legit good runner, not just a good runner for a catcher, like a good runner. There's confidence that like, hey, if we could make him an outfielder, if we needed to, he could play third base if we needed him to. You know, he's got the defensive versatility. I think he'll go out as a catcher, obviously. That's where his future is. But that's the level of athleticism we're talking about, though, is that there's confidence that we could probably put him in center field and he'd probably be okay. That's kind of what we're dealing with there. And the defensive piece behind the plate has gotten a lot better. The hands are really soft. He steals strikes. Like, his framing metrics have been very solid. He's a good thrower. Like, we're not talking about, you know, like a Yadier Molina-type thrower, but so few are. But he's a good thrower. He's going to help the running game. Pitchers love throwing to him. That's a lot of the feedback I've gotten on it, too, is that his relationships with the pitchers is really, really good. They love throwing to him. He loves catching them. And that's the kind of small stuff that ends up mattering when you're asking someone like Ryder Helfrich to not only be the most productive guy in the lineup, but also be a leader, which is what he is at this point as a junior.
I want to go back to Hunter Dietz because we watched him pitch Saturday, And after the first inning, I had him at 10 strikes and 13 pitches. And you said he was throwing 92, 94, touched 95. And we kind of looked at each other. We gave each other the look, you know, the look like, wow, that looked good. Yeah. What did you see from him? And you know, knowing what you know about him, what do you think the ceiling is for him?
Well, let's start here. Let's not forget that when he came in as a freshman, he was kind of the 1B to Gackle's 1A in that recruiting class in terms of pitchers. And I think it's easy to forget that because of just the injury stuff. Again, it's not all his fault. Just, you know, he's had a hard time getting healthy, but he sure looks healthy now. And what stood out to me in that outing was, yes, the stuff was crisp, but it wasn't just that he was pounding the strike zone and that he had swing and miss stuff. All that's important too. Even his misses looked purposeful. Like they were misses in a specific spot. They were misses to set up something else. Like he looked in control the entire time he was on the mound. And look, I mean, it was 92, 94, touching 95. And that's, considering how little he has pitched, that's pretty impressive. Like, so if you told me it's, you know, 93, 95, touch a 97 come springtime after a fall in the weight room and just, you know, getting his arm stretched out, like I believe you there as well.
Matt Hobbs told me, the fall that he came in, he said, I thought I would see Hunter Dietz in a Boston Red Sox uniform before I ever saw him in an Arkansas uniform. That tells you how much the coaching staff thought of him out of high school.
Yeah, he was a guy, as they say, and it's disappointing that it took this long for him to get where he is. But I think the beauty of that, if you're Arkansas, is that you've survived well without him. But then B, I think it's, you know, everybody has to step up, and there's some guys in this pitching staff that maybe, you know, got some more opportunities where he didn't, that maybe they're better off for it. And now Dietz could be, you know, a key piece of that puzzle as well.
And there's a hunger too. I mean, like if it comes easy to you, not that it comes easy to anybody, but if you have success in year one or year two or both, you know, you're motivated, but I don't know that you're as motivated as you are whenever, you know, you've dealt with the arm injury. And then the night that you're coming back from it, you're pulling a resistance band and it hits you in the face. I mean, this is wacky what's happened to him. And I feel like there's maybe a lot of motivation, and when motivation and talent and skill combine, it feels like it could be, you know, really beneficial to the Razorbacks.
Yeah. And I think it sets him up also to be a little bit of a leader on the pitching staff, because who better to, you know, to be able to talk to a guy, you know, some of the young pitchers, Peyton Lee and Jordan Martin, to say, look, don't take any of this for granted, because, you know, you can come in here just as a guy who's the best thing since sliced bread, mowing hitters down in your freshman fall, and you look up and you've thrown an inning in 2/3 over 2 years like he has. So I think that's valuable from that standpoint too, of like, if you need a real life example of how like life comes at you fast in baseball and wacky things can happen, he's a living example of it. And so beyond just being a productive guy on the mound, which I think he will be, I think he's also probably in a bit of a leadership role that maybe he didn't even ask for, but because of his experience, he's in.
In your fall report at D1Baseball.com, you quote Dave Inhorn. You talked to him pretty extensively this weekend. What stood out to you from what he had to say about this team?
There was an energy to him. And I try not to do amateur body language expert stuff, you know, but there was an energy to him. And I asked him about it. I said, is there something about a fall like this where you don't have all the answers, where you've got to see what you got and mix and match and play around? Is there something to a different energy? And he said, oh yeah. Like it was a quick answer for him. Oh yeah. Like that's, you know, that's something that, you know, you there's an energy to it. There's an anxiousness to it. There's a little bit of worry to it, but ultimately the biggest thing is you're just excited to be out here and just see what we got. And so that was the thing that I really came away with. One of the other things that I heard him say that I came away and piqued my interest was that how positive he was about the way in which Micah New has come in and been the same guy that they saw over the summer. I think there's sometimes a thing with Cape superstars, especially that are transferring up, that there's a little bit of a hangover because, look, it's been a long summer. He played a lot. It's easy to come in and then you start facing pitchers that are, let's face it, the Cape pitching is not what it was 10, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. You come in here, you start facing some of these big time arms Arkansas has, and you get blown up a little bit. And you and I saw it. His first couple at-bats Saturday weren't particularly good. I think at one point he swung and missed on 7 straight pitches. But, and then some of that's going to be his game, right? He's got some swing and miss, but DVH was really complimentary of, he's fit right in. He's super laid back. He wants to be great. I don't have any worry about him, you know, kind of continuing what he did over the summer based on what we've seen so far.
I want to talk about the freshman real quick. Carson Brumbaugh is really the one that stands out to me. And, you know, you look at some of these freshmen get in the box and you say, that guy needs the 4 months in the weight room that he's about to get before the season begins. You look at Brumbaugh, and he is more physically mature than a lot of the players who are his age. I like his bat. I like his glove. It feels to me like if there's a freshman on this roster who's going to get playing time early on the position side, it's going to be him.
Yeah, the physicality piece is important, and he looks the part. From a couple of standpoints, one is, you know, he's going to have the raw power he's going to need right out of the gate. But I think even more than that, it's that that body is a little more ready to hold up to the physical rigors of playing 56 games plus a postseason. A lot of freshmen just aren't ready for that. Even freshmen that played in baseball hotbeds and went into the state championship and played summer ball, it's just different playing 56 games over a 3-4 month period. I think his body is ready to handle that in a way that a lot of freshmen aren't. And you're right that it's a varied skill set. Like Dave Van Horn said, you know, he might help us in the mound. He's up, you know, he's sitting 96 with his fastball on the mound. And, you know, we'll see if he has the finer points of the craft, because that's important too. But that's a pretty good starter kit for a guy who's going to help. And I think of it this way too. You know, if he's slumping at the plate, hey, let's put him on the mound. Let's see if we can get him feeling better about himself. Let's try that. And then if that doesn't work, we'll go back to hit it. Like, it just gives you so many options for a talented guy like him.
And they've got another freshman, Luke Cornelison, who I think that they're looking at as a potential two-way player too. And sometimes it's not about what they can give you from, you know, just what their ERA is or their WHIP or their numbers. Sometimes it's just about, hey, what kind of innings can you give us in a game that gets away one way or the other? And I feel like that's going to be increasingly important, these two-way guys. Now, as you see the rosters get, you know, shrunk down after the house settlement this year.
Yeah, and I think that it's funny you bring that up, because I was talking to the coaching staff after the scrimmage on Saturday, and they specifically brought up that this fall has been a little bit different because we just don't have the arms here. You know, they're used to having more players in the fall, and that allows you to scrimmage more, because if we're honest, there are five or six guys in the mound who just aren't going to be a part of it in the spring. But those guys are important in the fall because you need to give hitters more at-bats. And they just don't have that this year. There's a reason they're scrimmaging twice a week as opposed to 5 days a week this year, because they just don't have as much depth. So to your point, yeah, the 4 innings somebody might need to throw in a midweek game against, you know, Little Rock, although that team's pretty good at this point, but you know my point, like midweek, generic midweek team X, the 4 innings you can get out of guys who aren't really part of the mix on the weekends is pretty valuable when, yeah, you're working with a thinner roster than you're used to.
We are 5 months away from opening weekend. Is the SEC, is it going to be decided this year by the usual suspects, or is there somebody that might be lurking out there like a Kentucky did in 2024 and could sneak up on these teams?
Well, Kentucky, again, I think they might be top 20 to start the season. I think that's a team that's, but let me give you a little different answer and give you Alabama. And I like their roster because I've been a little bit, I don't want to say critical, but a little bit curious to see if Alabama could kind of keep this up, because they've been very portal dependent. They're not quite Georgia in terms of going all in, but their best players outside of Justin LeBron the last 2 years have been portal guys. And when you get kind of stuck in that cycle, it can be hard to get out because you're just old every year. So you're replacing a bunch of roster every year. This freshman class Alabama has is the best one that Rob Vaughn's had. They've got some guys that, I mean, they look like a football team, frankly. I mean, big physical guys that have played a lot of baseball that are going to bring a lot of power to the plate, power arms on the mound. If that freshman class is as impactful as the one Auburn had last year with Chris Rimbert and Bub Terrell and Chase Frelick, that whole group, if Alabama's freshman class is that impactful, I think Alabama could do what Auburn did last year. Auburn went from being unranked in the start of the season to being the number 4 overall seed in the tournament. I think if these freshmen for Alabama are that good, and that's a high bar to clear, I get it. But if they are, I think that's on the table potentially for Alabama.
Should we make anything of Arkansas's schedule, the fact that they don't get Tennessee, LSU, Texas, Texas A&M, or Vanderbilt? Those are five heavy hitters that they get to avoid in the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, you'd rather, if you're talking about trying to win an SEC title, which is the point, yeah, you take that as a positive, I think. Now, all SEC schedules are hard, and if you ask some of the coaching staff, they're running out the line that, you know, our record is actually better against the great teams that we miss than it is against the teams we have on our schedule, which point well taken, but that doesn't also mean that you wouldn't rather miss LSU and Tennessee if you have the choice, right? So, but yeah, I do think you take it as a break. They caught a little break. Doesn't mean it's not going to be hard. Doesn't mean you're going to cruise through and you should be seen as the prohibitive favorite to win the league, but I think you can take it as a positive, yeah.
I also, you know, I think that there's value in playing those teams. Like, look how much better Arkansas got in May this last year when they played three games against Texas and they played three games against Tennessee and three games against LSU. I don't know that they get the run to the Final Four of the College World Series without that stretch that really made them grow up and play a certain way.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I also think it's just, as someone who just observes the entire league and someone who at my core is just a fan of college baseball, one of the things we lose with these massive leagues is that I would like to see Arkansas play Tennessee and LSU most years, right? Like, so we are losing some of these series that were every year or most years competitions that now are going to be on a rotation that's a little less often. And that's a bummer. So I think from a watchability standpoint, it is disappointing as well.
There were 1.9 million people that watched Arkansas and LSU in the semifinal up in Omaha. You would think that TV networks and the league would say, hey, let's capitalize on the interest of that game.
You would think. Yeah. And certainly I would be, I was one of the 1.9 million. Well, actually, I guess I wasn't.
Cause yeah,
I
we don't count because we were there.
Yeah, that's right. I guess we didn't count, but yeah, you'd think, and I'm hopeful that maybe we come up with some better solutions moving forward, but it's just the reality of the world we're in. And, you know, 16 team conferences, were just not, that's not the way we designed them from the beginning for a reason.
I'd be like 1.925 after they count in-person attendance. Joe, right. You do a great job at D1 Baseball. It was good to see you over the weekend. I appreciate you coming on.
You too, Matt. Take care, buddy.
All right, we'll see you later. Joe Healy from D1Baseball.com. We appreciate you joining us today on our show. Hope that we see you at our website, wholehogsports.com, or tomorrow on our podcast. Have a great day, everybody.